I know people love to flood their cities with the poop water, so I've seen some pretty complex videos on YouTube.
This is Up Up Down Down, the show about the art and craft of video games. Joining us today is Nigel Brooke, a 15-year veteran of the games industry, having worked for Radical Entertainment, later Activision, is now co-founder of Steam Clock Software. Hi, Nigel.
Hello.
Also joining us today is Carolina Corpa. Carolina is the lead designer at Colossal Order, where she has led the design of the smash hit game Cities Skylines. Hi, Carolina. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
We're great. It's very exciting to have you on the show. We've been playing Cities Skylines on and off since, I think this is the first day or two when it came out, and I have somebody who loves these sort of building simulation games, but had been pretty disappointed. I'm sure this is a common story, but disappointed by kind of the SimCity, mm-hmm. kind of had dropped the torch, and I was kind of sad that that type of game just wasn't being built to the level that it used to, and
yeah.
And your team just came in and knocked it out of the park, so it's very exciting. So our topic today is the audacity of simulation games. Simulation games, obviously, are one of the most sort of complicated things that you can do as a game because, you know, when you're building it out, you don't know exactly what's going to happen when it's running because you have all these great design ideas, but they all coming together can be an interesting challenge. So what are some of the kind of interesting things that came up during the development of Cities Skylines as far as the simulations presented themselves?
I have to say that the simulation has been a big challenge, of course, with the game, since that's the whole game. But kind of first up, I have to say that simulation games also have the benefit that if you have a small team, like we have only 14 people at the moment, simulation is something that you can really do well. Because if you get the simulation working, then the game just creates new content and it can be played for as long as you want to play it, instead of having this like 9-hour cinematic spectacle that just you basically play to everyone, then it's done. But the most interesting challenge is, well, I have to say that the traffic system is always a challenge, because when the company was founded, we always wanted to do a city building game, but because for our first project it would have been absolutely huge and we wanted to kind of try out how the team works and just to see that we can actually make a game, we wanted something smaller. But since we kind of identified at that point that traffic is going to be the one thing that we really will struggle with, because it's the end game content of all city building games, and it's just something that is never perfect. It always has some flaws. So that's why we went for the public transportation simulations, so that we can actually work with the traffic systems before we have to get into this whole city building.
That's a smart way to approach it.
Yeah, and it really worked well, because even though the traffic is not perfect, even in Skylines, it's if you would compare it with the first Cities in Motion that we did, it's like light years ahead of that one. So if we would have done Skylines as our first project, I don't think it would have gone quite so well.
Yeah, a lot of people, I see people either on the subreddit, especially in the early days of the game, expressing kind of confusion about the traffic system. Like, how is it that I found it this one time, this one vehicle drove in this supposedly irrational route? But as a programmer, I am fascinated that it is even possible to simulate like these thousands of vehicles all on these different routes with priorities, and that if you like delete a road, then the cars just kind of stop and then they decide where they're going to go and then they drive off, rather than like in the old city building games, if you deleted a piece of road, then the cars would just delete with you or they would explode or something. Like, So I'm pretty impressed that like it's even feasible.
Yeah, and I know that the newest SimCity actually did it so that the vehicles decide the lane they take, two intersections before actually reaching the point that they are kind of looking at. So because they have such small cities, they can actually afford to have the vehicles make these decisions all the way while traveling to the destination. Because in Skylines, basically, when someone leaves their house, when a trip is kind of decided that someone will go somewhere, that's when the whole route is calculated at the same time. And that's how they do it, unless a route is deleted and then they have to find something new. And I think you could actually crash the game if you deleted enough roads, because all of the vehicles would have to decide again which road to actually take.
My guess would be that you just, the more you deleted, that the longer the cars would just sit there waiting their turn in the queue of decision making.
Yeah, that's how it should work.
But instead, it just recalculates.
One thing that's interesting about what you were saying there about, you know, simulating different things in a different game is that that's one of the things I kind of find fascinating about simulations, is that, you know, all games have some of these sort of simulation elements in it, and a lot of it's about picking, you know, where on the hierarchy you want to simulate, right? Like the situation that you guys have got is a situation where, okay, we want to simulate the behavior patterns of the whole city and make sure that, like, people are going to their jobs and stuff like that. So you have a higher level view of simulation, like the kind of simulations that I'm used to working with coming from games that aren't sort of simulation oriented is I've done a couple games that had big cities in them, you know, just like art that people have built for the cities. And so we did spend a lot of time simulating traffic, but our traffic simulations were always of the sort of kind that you're talking about, of, you know, which lanes are people in and when do they change lanes and how do they maneuver around an obstacle when there's something in the lane and how do they go through intersections and stuff like that. And if you actually followed one of those cars around, you know, its movement is totally irrational at the higher level, right? We're only concerned about simulating, does the traffic look okay if you're, you know, running through this intersection on the way to go beat up some supervillain sort of thing, right? So that's true across all simulation games, right? That something like The Sims does a much more careful simulation of the internal lives of the characters than you guys do, but
yeah,
you know, but you don't have zoning restrictions that you need to deal with in The Sims the same way that you guys do in City Skylines.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, just kind of concentrating on the what the game is really about, and that's kind of a beautiful thing about the simulation. Like once you find the actual like what is the core of the game, that's what you want to simulate, and then kind of everything else is just something additional to that.
Yeah, to some degree I feel like even though the traffic has like a few, you know, quirky things, that it's a system that you can actually learn, and that it's close enough to the way the traffic works in life that I see these like guides written by actual city planners that plan traffic systems in real life saying like, oh yeah, here in City Skylines you'll have this problem. And it's like sometimes even if it's a quirky problem, like, oh, there's a bunch of cars backed up in one lane. And it's like, oh, well, you can solve this by using these techniques. And this is generally, you know, don't have enough inflow or the speed of these routes. People are taking a preferential route because you made this really high speed, you know, route through your industrial district, and now there's a bunch of semi trucks on the road, and like, oh yeah, that just is logical, and it kind of falls out of the simulation.
Yeah, and there is always a kind of if there is a long line of cars, there is a reason for this, and kind of because the thing that people are talking about the most is that the cars don't seem to be using all the lanes. They actually are, but since if some route is really popular, many people are taking the same roads, that lane will be backed up because everyone wants to take the same one. And what it actually means is that if they would use all the lanes, somewhere further along the route, there is still some spot where all of the cars can't just fit at the same time. So because we tried a lot of things with the traffic system and things that would have had the cars actually using many lanes, but since the actual problem areas didn't really change, it just made it harder to actually identify where all of the vehicles were going and what's the actual problem that you have to fix. So even though it sometimes looks kind of unrealistic and weird, once you find the logic and learn how to use it, it's kind of working as it should.
I think that's a really interesting distinction in the simulation games, that you have to make trade-offs where you could make the simulation technically maybe more realistic, but then it's harder for the player to play the game because, you know, it's just like, oh, there's a problem and I have no sense of the source of this problem. Whereas,
and it's harder as developers to debug the game.
Sure.
Like, I'm sure that's part of wanting to keep the simulation simple, is when you're in the process of making the game, the simpler the simulation is, the easier when there's a catastrophic failure to look at and figure out what is going on. Whereas if you have huge numbers of elements that are simulated using extremely complicated steps, like, yeah, if you need it, you need it and go for it. But if you can get away with a simpler simulation, then it's going to be a lot easier to find and diagnose the catastrophic failures when they happen.
Yeah, that's true. And, well, for a game that's only about simulation, of course, we kind of are a bit hindered by the fact that we actually have to have logical working systems, because if we only would have to simulate cities that look nice, it would be much easier, because then it wouldn't have to be actually playable, and kind of the player wouldn't have to understand what's going on. And I think why many people aren't feeling that the traffic is a bit intense, we might just need a few more kind of text boxes of information, or maybe something that tells them that if your car seems to be using one lane, look at this pattern and find out where the problem area is. Because right now, not all of the players immediately kind of catch on to it. Like, what does it mean when there is a long line of cars somewhere? They think that that piece of road would be the problem, and if the cars would use all the lanes, the problem would go away, but that's not what it indicates. So we need to communicate this better to the players.
And that's true in real life. Like, you see circumstances where there's a bridge that's not for like 2 more miles, but there's this giant line of cars all in the right lane, and you're driving past them. You're like, suckers, I don't know why they're standing there. And then when you get to the front of the line, you're like, oh crap, I needed to be in that line.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And we tried out a system where the cars changed lanes much more often, but it just ended up making even worse traffic jams, because then when someone is trying to join in the long line, they actually block two lanes right at the same time. So then you have just more problems coming from this seemingly easy fix. Like, well, let's give them the option to actually change to the lane later on, but nope, it didn't work.
Something that I find sort of interesting is this, or super interesting, is this mod community that is people creating tools to help deal with anything in the game, but traffic in particular, because it's one that people find is to be one of the sort of main challenges of the game. And there's a mod that I saw, which I think I installed, that you could, if you're getting really stuck, that you could query a piece of road and say, okay, where are the people on this piece of road? Where are they all going and where are they all coming from? Which was a pretty interesting one. Yeah,
that's really nice.
And that's something that I can see. There's always these decisions like, how much do we want to reveal to the player and how much do we want them to have to figure out? But that was one where as soon as I saw that, I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, you know, sometimes it's just, okay, I just need to build more roads. But often it's like, oh, of course, all of the semi-trucks are all clamming. The only way they can get to the port is through this one intersection. That's why this is dumb.
Oh, yeah.
But I thought that was kind of an interesting little...
Yeah. Yeah, and it's really something that... Because we will keep updating the game, adding content. We have 3 patches and then paid expansions. So we do look at the mods quite closely and try to find things that could make the game even better. We would never just take a mod and put it in the game, but kind of if we can do something like that, but better integrated into the system, we might just use the idea and then... hopefully the game will be better also for the people who don't actually use mods, because I know we have lots of those.
Yeah, I remember the very first patch, there was a thing where it was like, yeah, we added this way to switch a road from one way to the opposite way.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something that's just kind of, as soon as you, like, it's the very, very first day that people were talking about on the Reddit and stuff, they're like, oh yeah, you should download the game and then install this switch from one way to the other way mod, right?
Oh, yeah.
And once you've integrated that, it's great.
Yeah, yeah, I think it was like almost 25% of all of the people who downloaded the game also got the mod. So we were kind of like, why didn't we come up with this idea? Because of course we have to have this button, and It was the first thing we added.
Yeah, that's perfect. Whereas that conversation could have been way slower if you just got a bunch of support email and people complaining on the forums, and you're like, yeah, maybe we should add that. But when you see a stat like that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, as a designer, I really love how Steam Workshop gives me access to all of this information that otherwise I would not be able to find. Because with the previous games, we have been on the forums and talking with players, making them vote on what they would want added to the game. But there is the problem that if we only have the user forums, most of the people who come to the forums have some kind of a problem. They want to complain, or they have a technical problem that they are looking to solve somehow. And this means that the audience that I can then communicate with is solely the people who have had some problems with the game, not the ones who just play away and enjoy what they are getting. And with the workshop, I can actually kind of see what the people enjoying the game are also doing.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's definitely can be a problem in any community, that if it's self-selected for the negative people, then it's a little harder to keep an upbeat attitude about your interactions with your customers.
How detailed of information do you track about sort of what people are doing and where people are having problems? Like, is it, you know, you mentioned sort of knowing when people have mods installed, but do you keep any sort of statistics of like, here's what the, you know, the median number of roads or number of people or traffic level or, you know, where the growth curves of the city stall out? Like, it seems like that information could be quite useful in sort of figuring out where people are getting stuck in the game, particularly when you've got this complicated simulation that, you know, people are playing the game in ways that you guys have kind of never seen. Do you guys collect that sort of stuff and look at it, or is it more just kind of use what tools are there, but you haven't put in a huge amount of specific data collection?
We do have a data collection system within the game that actually saves data from the users who actually connect the game with their Paradox account. So that's not all of the users. We get some information through Steam of all of the users, but it's kind of, we have these combinations of different things. But so far, mostly we've only kind of seen that the game seems to be working as it should. So there are no big dips like that at some population, everyone suddenly loses half of the people in the city or something like this. So that we can basically just see that the graphs are looking like we expected. And I think the latest piece of information that I found really interesting was from a publisher. They told me that for players who have no mods in the whole game, if they haven't installed any mods, they play on average 3 hours or something, like the whole time spent with the game. But if they have even one mod installed, that average time played goes to 10 hours.
Wow.
So we can clearly see that the mods are something that really keep people playing. And just like we wanted, they kind of offer more content, because we know that we are a small team. We can't really produce content that fast, that people could only get stuff from us. And it's just awesome that the modders are so skilled and fast, and they learn new things really quickly, so that they can always be kind of making things to actually make the game better and just to add to the existing stuff.
I find it kind of amazing that the average playtime is as low as that. Like, Alan, you know, was sort of a fan of the game and bought it and played a lot, whereas I just picked it up and played for a few hours, sort of to, you know, not be completely clueless about it for recording this episode. And I think I played more than 3 hours of it, and I basically feel like I, you know, was still like figuring out where things were even located. Like, it seems amazing that anyone that was at all seriously playing the game could play it for as little as 3 hours.
Yeah, I think that also includes the people who have just kind of started the game once, maybe didn't even play. I'm not sure if it includes people who have downloaded the game and have not ever launched it. So that could explain it, because it sounds kind of low, but I didn't get the actual statistics. I just heard this legend of these numbers. So I'm not sure how it's actually done.
It seems like one of those things that if it is accurate, it might be some weird, like, strongly bimodal distribution of, like, okay, there's, you know, this large group of people that play for like an hour and then give up on it almost immediately. And then, you know, anyone who plays it for more than 2 hours ends up playing it for 10 hours, but you don't see them in the graph, you know, in the average, because it's like, there's this huge group that's played for like half an hour, pulling everything down.
Yeah.
And it could also be that like anyone who plays it for more than a couple hours is like, man, let's check out those mods. And so it's not like, to some degree, playing a lot also makes you want to install mods as much as having mods also helps you play a lot. So there's a both directional phenomena as well. Something that I thought was interesting in sort of this discussion of like, you get this complex simulation and people are kind of getting to grips with how does it work and how do you make decisions about it? Were there any times where you were thinking, you know, we have this information in the system, like why this person died or, you know, something like that. I guess you do reveal that, but like, you know, things that, that are happening behind the scenes in your simulation that you, you're kind of deciding whether or not to show that in the UI. Should we actually reveal where every single car is going in this patch of road? Or should we actually reveal how this thing is getting calculated? Or is it too much complexity? Was that something that came pretty naturally or were there decision points on that?
I think there must have been some times when we talked about the information being shown, that, but mostly we just, the thing was that we only wanted to avoid having lots of numbers or anything kind of, we wanted the game to be really easy to pick up. So instead of numbers, we always have like sliders or graphs or something that's
or color-coded
visually easy.
Yeah,
something like this. And kind of getting all of the colors right was a real challenge because... first of all, people who can't distinguish red and green, naturally, they play games. We have to take it into account and make sure that they can actually play the game. And that kind of already takes away that we can't have a scale of red to green, which is sort of the normal scale when you want to show something that's good or bad. And we had to come up with new kind of... shades to actually communicate some things to the player, and this took a lot of effort and a lot of time to just get it looking like it should. And there were some menus where we really thought that we have the system that when you place a building, the kind of optimal reach of the vehicles operating from the service building is highlighted on the roads in green. And we used to have it first so that the kind of the range was in green and the other parts were in red, because this was like that the vehicles don't usually go this far. But how the testers understood this visuals was that the red parts were that's bad, like something is wrong if the area is red. And that wasn't really what we were trying to say. We were saying that the green area is the optimal, like we have good coverage in this area and it just takes a little bit longer for the vehicles to actually get to the red areas. So when we changed the red to white, this problem went away, because then everyone seemed to understand at once, like green is good, white is okay.
Right. Yeah, that's the. I mean, I'm sure playtesting is huge in something like this, but that numbers thing that you mentioned, trying not to show too many numbers, is something I learned the kind of the hard way when I was making a simulation game in, I guess, early university, and I had all these numbers behind the scenes, and by default, I just started revealing them, and then people are like, okay, this looks like a spreadsheet. Like, oh yeah, this is how much, whatever you have, and then these things go together to make this stat, and there was like 18 different stats that you had, and then I started hiding the numbers, and then the problem was like, well, I don't know why I'm gaining population. Like, I know I'm losing, or this is sucking, but why? You know, and then I started color coding things, and people couldn't, and then my boss at the time couldn't tell red from green, and so he was complaining.
Well, that's easy to test.
It is.
You also always got to balance with stuff like that. The like your most hardcore players are the ones that are going to want all the numbers, right? So you have this, you know, the balance of, okay, we want to make it accessible to casual people, but then we're going to have this hardcore vocal group that's like really into the game that are going to want more numbers. But then you've also got that tendency then for the... you know, hardest of hardcore kernel of those, if you give them too many numbers, just turning into complete like min-maxing rules lawyers of like figure out exactly where the hole in the simulation is that you can exploit the crap out of to, you know, to gain, make the numbers go up as fast as possible. And those, it seems like those are always kind of fighting against each other anytime you've got some, you know, some simulation that's responsible for producing the, you know, the end gameplay result that, that people really want to be successful at.
Yeah, that's true. And kind of going the way that we wanted to use the visuals rather than the numbers, it actually just helps with the fact that no one can min-max the whole game, like, totally. So they always have this kind of leeway, and since things are affected by other things, the players know enough, but they don't know everything, because then they would get stuck on that, like, 1.5 points of something and just fiddle with that for all eternity. And I don't think that's as much fun that the game can actually provide. So we wanted to go the bit more casual way, but we do kind of recognize that the people who have played a lot of city builders, they are the audience that we are also making the game for. So it was not like we aimed for an all casual audience, because then modding wouldn't really have been a thing, because if we wanted just the people who play city building games on Facebook, they wouldn't really be the same crowd that likes to mod games.
It seems like you've done a pretty good balance on that, because there's people who I would say are extremely hardcore as far as how much time they put into the game, but they still seem to be doing it for the enjoyment of making the city and like crafting it and like looking at how it runs and solving individual little problems rather than calculating exactly what is the perfect arrangement, how many elementary schools per block, how many, like even in the SimCity games, which also weren't really amenable to that, I thought. Like often when I would talk to people, they would be like talking about getting really into how can they exactly optimize their layout of the bus loops or whatever, which some people get into that, but I see often the things that people are sharing or excited about in Cities Skylines is often like, look at this really interesting total system that I made and kind of crafted like an art almost. And
yeah, and we have another system that actually kind of guides players towards this kind of hazy understanding of things, that they don't have to know each number, because we have the aging citizens, which was something that I was really scared of. I had already planned it before we started to work on the game, because I had tried it for a previous game when we didn't do it in the end, but I wanted to have it in this game. And then I noticed that almost none of the existing city builders have any mechanics like this, and that to me meant that there might be something really horribly wrong with the mechanic. But we investigated, tried out a few things, and it didn't seem that dangerous. And what it actually does for the player is that the needs of the city fluctuate a bit, so that you can't get into this state when you have the perfect city,
right.
Nothing needs to be done. So there is always kind of something new coming up and something that needs optimization, and things that you can actually do something about. Because the most boring part of any simulation game is that when you have the simulation just nailed, everything works like it should, I don't want to touch the game at that point, because I would just break something. So, and that's not really rewarding to the player, that if you get it to this balance point, you would do something and then it just falls apart.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I've seen that in other simulation and city building games, people trying to delay that, like you see the business of technology in the early SimCity games, which you sort of to some degree in Cities, in that like as you unlock stuff as your population gets higher, but I guess they would do like, oh well, the technology changes over time, and so what you can do with the city changes over time, but pretty much as soon as you unlock the last level technology, it would be like, all right, well, the city's kind of perfect now, I don't want to touch it. If I make it any bigger, the traffic will be bad.
That's really boring for the player if they get kind of, they play the game until the end and there is nothing to do, and they still would want to play, because of course we want to get them playing more and continue with the game. So we only want the city to always need something at least.
Some of the early SimCity games, at least, I don't know about the later ones, because I think I only played like the first two and then haven't played any of the more recent ones. Don't they have like natural disasters and stuff to kind of mix that up? I don't know if you, I haven't played far enough in the game to know if you guys have anything like that, but did you, do you, and if not, was that sort of a considered decision? Because the natural disasters in the early SimCity games always struck me as kind of weak. Like, even, you know, even though I was like a teenager at the time and my game design sense hadn't developed as far as it has now, it was still like, okay, this, you know, this business of like Godzilla rampaging through my city all of a sudden because it's gotten too big and too good is pretty lame.
Yeah, and since that was something that the player had to really turn on or initiate that this disaster is happening, and that was the way SimCity handled the situation when the city is perfect and there is nothing to do, then kind of like if you're building sand castles, once you get it done, what else is there to do than destroy all of your hard work and then start again? But I don't think that's really a fun mechanic, so we don't currently have any disasters, but it's something that we might do at some point as an expansion, because it's kind of a thing that people expect a city-building game to have. Skylines doesn't really need it, because it has the changing mechanics so that there is always something to do, so the game doesn't really stagnate the same way as SimCity does. But then again, it's just fun to let the Godzilla run around your city. So it is something that kind of works with this genre, because it's a sandbox. People can do what they want, and of course, someone wants to destroy their city. That's why we have the dams, and I know people love to flood their cities with the poop water. So I've seen some pretty complex videos on YouTube of how they build like continuous dams and just let all the dirty water pile into the lakes and then just removing the dam and letting it all in the city, and that's fun.
I definitely accidentally disastered my city like 2 or 3 hours in. I just like, oh, hydroelectric, that's good. I'll just dam this river. And it was like upstream from my city. And so then I go off and doing something, and then I see the little warnings or chirpers going off about something. And I look back and I'm like, no, what did I do? So there's one catastrophic thing you can do to your city, which is not evaluating the dam flow.
Yeah, and we kind of, because we did the dynamic water simulation, so what we only had to do was that while we tried to avoid it being too easy to flood your city, because for someone to accidentally do it, that's not really what we want, so it's not the easiest thing to do. And then again, you can always recover, because the water evaporates at a certain how do you say it? It evaporates during time. And when you wait, your city will be just as good as new in the end.
Yeah, and that definitely, I was kind of annoyed at the game at letting me do that. But pretty quickly, I realized, oh, this isn't as catastrophic as I thought it was now that I've fixed it and deleted the dam. And I actually installed some water pumps. They seemed to speed up the rate that it got rid of the water. I don't know if that actually was true, but I felt like they were.
Yeah, they actually moved the water so that if you would have just a tiny lake and you would pump water from that, it would eventually run dry. So that it is actually kind of physical water that has a direction and the flow always. So it's
awesome.
It's interesting what people can do with it. But it went really well with the sandbox concept, because playing around with the water is something that some people really enjoy doing with the game, and that's absolutely a valid way of playing the game.
The level of complexity when you get into having so many little systems that you kind of individually design, and then they just work together in ways that you couldn't necessarily predict or whatever, results in just kind of this fiendishly complex game that's really amazing that a team of that size is able to kind of make it all hold together. But I, as a programmer, I find the patch notes always really interesting, because often they'll have fixes for things that I haven't seen, or sometimes things that I have seen, but things like people no longer die when your city is at zero population. And I see that, and I'm like, as a player, I'd be like, what kind of craziness is that? But as a programmer, I'm like, that's hilarious. I want to know, like, why, how did that happen?
Oh, yeah.
I find this really fun. Or the other one was cruise ships traveling on land was the one that I actually think I saw once, which...
I think that's a feature that people really miss, because those were awesome, the land ships.
Yeah.
There was a glitch in the pathfinding, so the ships sometimes, rarely, just suddenly decided that they will go straight through the city to the harbor if they couldn't find the path to the to the location they were going to. And it didn't really, didn't disrupt anything. It just looked a bit funny. But they still kind of, they got to the harbor and picked up passengers and everything kind of worked.
And everyone in the city was happy.
Yes, yes. And the users were kind of happy too, because they got to share these awesome screenshots of the, of the ships going on land.
One of the ones that was in the, one of the first couple of patches that I noticed, I didn't actually notice it happening in practice, but people were talking about it, was this thing where parks would decrease commercial demand, which I think maybe to some degree is still in the game. But what was the, was that like a design decision? Like, let's make it so that when parks will have the following effects, they do this, and one of the things they do is decrease commercial demand in your city? Or was that just an accidental consequence of the complexity of the system?
It was sort of an accident, because the way they actually did it was that, because when the citizens leave their home, they have a list of locations that they might want to visit. So it's kind of kind of the locations they want to go to. And because if you had many parks, they were kind of high on the list, which meant that the people didn't want to go to the commercial locations as much as they used to, because they went to the parks instead. And this meant that the commercial locations were kind of not as full of people, because they measure how many customers come in and how much goods they can actually sell. So it resulted in the demand meters always showing that the commercial demand is quite low. And it kind of tipped the balance also, so that the industrial areas produced more goods than the commercial areas could use, so they shipped a lot of those out of the city, which meant a lot of trucks on the roads, so the traffic got even more intense. And it took us some time to actually find out what was causing this low demand, but it was just that the possible destinations were kind of way towards the parks too much. So
So the solution was make people like parks less compared to how much they like shopping.
Yes. So because to get the happiness boost from the parks, the people don't actually have to visit those. It's not like they are less powerful in any way. It's just that there's less people going to the parks.
That's amazing.
It still looked nice, and it was really weird that this kind of problem popped up. But luckily, it was not as critical as those things could be. All in all, the game has been really surprisingly bug-free and stable, because we don't have almost any crash bugs, only a tiny amount, which is really, really good for a game of that size. But I just tell everyone that our programmers are so good that they don't make mistakes.
I would expect, at least with the mods, that there would be crashes just from people doing weird things that you didn't anticipate with the mods, but...
Well, that's a modern problem. That's
Our
problem. And usually they do really solid work too, so it's not that easy to break the game system.
One thing with simulation games is sometimes it's a little different. It's a little difficult to tell the difference between something that's a bug and something that's sort of an unintentional feature. Like, I think the park stuff that you were talking about definitely falls into that of like, I guess parks do kind of decrease commercial demand. Like, it's not a matter of the simulation being wrong. Like, it came up with a reasonable answer, you know, given the constraints, and something that probably there is some truth to. It just happens to be, you know, make the game slightly less fun. So you have to, you know, in some ways make it, I mean, less realistic isn't really the right term, but differently realistic maybe to work around. And I think that's a general characteristic of simulation games, is that it reaches a point of complexity where it's like, is this a bug, or is it just a thing that's a reasonable outcome of the simulation that we don't like for some reason?
Yeah. We before we start work on any game project, we always have these design pillars that we come up, kind of just these kind of short descriptions of what the game is really about. And with Skylines, one of the things was that realism is not as important as having fun. So whenever we came across something that was not realistic, but it created some meaningful choices or was really fun to play with, this was what we chose. We want the game rather to be fun than to be realistic. And this is something that really kind of you have to think about it for a while, because usually when you say simulation game, it means that we simulate something that's actually happening from the real world. But then again, the real world is not always fun. So we only wanted to go much more to have a nice game than to have a realistic simulation of something. And I think this really helped to make the game appeal to a larger audience, because running a city in real life is not fun, and we wanted to make it fun.
Running a city in real life is infuriating, because anything takes forever and everyone protests anything you change.
Yeah. Sitting in meetings and filling out forms and hoping to get the money you were promised and all of this. It's not something that I would do on my free time.
I'm sure city planners would be absolutely ecstatic if they could just be like, oh, hey, the traffic flow is a little bit high in this area. We're just going to bulldoze right through the middle of this block and put in a new road here. Right? Like,
oh, yeah.
But that particular thing is a difference in between other city games that I've played, is how easy it is in City Skylines to change the city in ways and experiment. Like, for example, if you are like, oh, I built this expensive building here and now I realize I don't want it here because I want to put a freeway through there, you can move the building. And like in real life, you can't move buildings, but at least not large ones. But in the game, it's more fun if you can undo that mistake. Or if you build something and then you unbuild it, you get most of your money back pretty quickly if you do it pretty quickly and things like that. That let you experiment.
Because we wanted lots of systems that help out, that when you make a mistake, you can recover and then the game stays fun. Because for these kinds of games, when you create something that you are thinking of, like you come to the game like, I want to create this kind of a city, I have a dream and I will make it happen with this game, so it would be really devastating that if you made a few mistakes, that would mean that you have to do like hours of work to actually get back to the state that you can actually continue building the city. So there is lots of these systems that help out, that if you do something wrong, you can just recover and continue playing, because it's not fun to make mistakes. So it should be kind of quickly smooth over and then just continue doing the fun stuff.
Yeah, I imagine that's something that you would generally hit up against when you're evolving the game and you're working on it. Like I imagine that when you're in testing, you change some rule, and even if that rule is good for sort of the long term of the game, that it will temporarily make the city you are working on, you know, have a bunch of problems, right? Maybe a bunch of people will die or something like that.
Yeah, I know we had some kind of, I don't know what it actually was, but we had these death waves. They still happen slightly, because we, at one point, we had this system that all of the citizens had a static lifespan. And what it meant was that when you made a new residential area, everyone who moved in was the same age, and they basically died on the same day.
Which made it a little difficult, because in this game, you need to actually deal with the people who have died.
Yeah. So it really didn't work. And this was kind of, we just added randomization so that everyone wouldn't die actually on the same day. And it helped out a lot.
Which seems pretty obvious, but, you know, you just record it and you're like, oh, yeah, it seems to be working. At first, it works.
Yeah, and in small scale, if you had only tiny cities, it seemed to be working. But once you have, like, 100,000 inhabitants and you make a huge new area, then it kind of escalates really quickly.
And it would be particularly bad for people who pause the game and then build a bunch then unpause.
Yeah, because then it kind of, on the same second, everyone will die. So it didn't work, but we got past it. And we had this system of that if a building becomes abandoned, then you had to bulldoze the building. And you still can, but right now it works so that if you just leave the abandoned buildings be, they can be repurposed at some point if the demand goes up. And this helped a lot, because for a player who maybe doesn't understand how the game system works, they are still learning, and if they made a mistake, they suddenly had half of the city abandoned, and they would have had to go and click each single building to remove those to actually proceed with the game.
Probably not the most fun activity.
Yeah. So and even now, there is this, I like to call it the safety net. So if you have like you build a new residential area and people move in, and then they suddenly notice that there is no water in the area. So what then happens is that the houses spawn a little icon saying that we want to have water, please. If the player responds, all goes well. Naturally, the icons go away and the city grows. If they don't, the houses spawn a slightly larger icon that's dark red, and it pulsates a bit faster, saying that we only need the water now. And if the player doesn't respond, eventually the buildings will get abandoned. But if the residential demand goes up, the same buildings will be repurposed. People will move in. Then they notice there is no water. Then they start asking for the water. They only ask for the water. They move out. And this cycle just goes on until the player actually like learns how to fix this problem. So they don't lose the game. Nothing really is... They lose a bit of money maybe or something, but it's not something that you can't recover from. So we wanted to make sure that if there is someone who just takes some time to learn how the game works, they could do it and just keep trying as long as they need without really getting into trouble. So and always when they finally understand what they need to do, they feel like they have just saved the city from the brink of destruction. And this is exactly the kind of feeling that keeps people playing. So they want to come back. It's their city and they want to make the city good and working nicely. So
that's so awesome. I didn't realize that it would happen multiple times. I just thought I was saving it from the brink repeatedly.
Yeah. And this was something that we just found out by surprise, because we used to have it so that you actually had to bulldoze all the buildings, and that was not nice. So when we removed that, we noticed that we don't have to have it so that it actually kind of your game ends or something, that there is a really big effect on failing so that something goes abandoned. And for most people, just having the problem icons, having something abandoned, that's a punishment enough. We don't have to do anything else. They are punished and they want to learn how to solve the problems. So it kind of works just the way that a sandbox in my mind should.
Wow, that's really awesome. I think that's also just an awesome in general overview of the topic with simulations and stuff, some really cool stories behind the scenes of what went into making City Skylines. How can people find more about what you're working on and what you're up to, Carolina?
I'd say the best place to be is the Paradox forums, because we, the team, actually go on the forums, we answer questions and talk with the fans. So if you want to talk with us, go to the forums and send a message and we can discuss. And then Paradox also has a Twitter account. I think it's cities_PDX. I think you can find it with Google easily.
Awesome.
And we have a really active Reddit community too, and they have a subreddit for the modders that's really, really active, and that's the best place to be if you are doing any mods, maybe run into some problems, need a helping hand. Just go there and ask. We are there also, and we want to help you.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thanks a lot. Thank you very much for taking some time and joining us on the show.
Thanks.
And thanks for everyone for listening. We always want to hear what you think. And we're also interested in suggestions for future guests or topics that you'd be interested to hear about. So you can send us a tweet at UpUpShow or send us an email, hello@upup.fm. And see you next time. Have you been playing any games in between your bouts of work? I know that the new expansion is coming out as we're recording. It's in a couple days, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 4 days from now, so really soon.
Yeah, so by the time this is out, then everyone will be able to go purchase After Dark. So encourage everyone to go do that if you've been playing City Skylines, especially if you're one of the people that, you know, played for a few hours and, you know, in the first few days, there's been a lot of improvements both in the game for free as well as in the new expansion that are worth checking out. So
I have to say that the day and night cycle just looks so awesome that I just sit in front of the computer and look at the city change from day to night. It's really looking good.
Cities definitely kind of look cooler at night, just in general, don't
they? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we had to do a texture pass on all of the buildings to make sure that the nighttime lights actually work like they should, because we do have like two or three mods that try to have a nighttime in the city, but because they didn't have textures that actually look nice during the nighttime, those were kind of not working so nicely. So I know the Iron team really hated me for it, but well, once they saw how the game looks, they were all good.
That's
so
awesome.
It really took a lot of work, but it's looking so nice that I'm sure that players will enjoy it a lot.
Yeah, and then it looks like there's a few improvements of sort of things that people have talked about, even just in the free patch, if people, you know, are still getting into it and aren't at the point where they want to buy the DLC, although of course they should. But things that like that shorefront land now is more valuable, and so people will like that.
It only makes kind of it makes sense. People want to build their cities on the shorelines, and they should be really rewarded for this. So it was something that really it encourages people to build more organic cities, maybe, because the shorelines rarely are really straight lines or anything like this. So they will utilize the road tool more, and it just looks nicer in general.
Yeah, and that's something that in the current game, I at first I was surprised, like, oh, why is this thing, like, I'm making this stuff, and then, like, there'll be low land value down by the water. But then when you think about it logically, as far as, like, how is the game constructed, it's like, what things can increase land value? And if one of those things is not water, then the water is going to be the furthest from anything. It's always going to be that your parks and your services are always not in the water. Right?
So. Yeah, yeah. So we kind of wanted to change that logic a bit so people could use the maps differently, and it really creates a lot of kind of new good ways to play the game. But on my free time, I've mostly been playing Diablo 3.
Oh, yeah.
Because they had the content. Yeah, they had the content patch like 20 days ago or something. I was at PAX in Seattle at the time, and I was like, why the hell would they post a patch at the same time as there was a convention, because I can't play when I'm abroad. But it's been really nice. I like the new locations, and Diablo has such a nice flow to the game that it's something that if I have like 15 minutes, I can just go play a little bit and then continue with other things. So that's for my schedules, that's perfect.
I'm curious about that, because I played Diablo 3 a bit when it came out. Well, that's got to be like 3 years ago now. I don't know how long ago it was, but it, when it first came out, and we were all really excited, and like, because we played Diablo 2 like 10 or 15 years ago, and now they're making this new one. And then I played it with like my family and my friends for the first month or so, and then was kind of like, I don't know. And the auction, everything was just about like selling stuff and then buying stuff at auction, and it wasn't really about... You almost never picked up anything that you were like, yeah, I got this cool new thing. And but from what I've heard over the like intervening time, they've made a lot of fairly dramatic changes. But I'm not actually familiar with what they are, what changes they made.
Yeah, they removed the whole auction house system, which was really good, because I don't understand how they could actually publish a game that was so far away from the Diablo games, because the auction house made it into an economic simulator thingy, because you could never get good stuff by actually playing the game and having nice drops. And that's the that's kind of the core of the whole genre, the Diablos, that you go into the dungeon, you kill enemies until something nice drops, then you use it to kill the enemies more efficiently until you get something even nicer. And all of this went away with the auction house, and It was really a different game. I don't know who it was designed for, but not Diablo fans, at least.
Yeah, it turned it into the game was just get as much gold as fast as you can so that you can buy another thing so you can get gold faster, which sounds like a similar game, but it's a totally different game that's much less satisfying.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, 'cause it doesn't have that, like, the random reward of the drop, right? Like that's, yeah. I mean, that whole style of gameplay is predicated on kind of the same thing that makes slot machines work, right? Of like, you are going and then you get this big random reward where if it's just like, oh, everything I kill gives me a little bit of gold, and eventually when I get enough gold, I'm going to be able to get something good. You don't get that same rush when it happens, right? It's like, oh, okay, yeah, I guess I accumulated enough stuff. I can go to the auction now and buy my cool thing. As opposed to like, yeah, this guy just dropped this amazing sword. I'm going to be so awesome now.
Oh, yeah. And I think with when the game came out, during the time I played it before on the patch that really made it into a good game, I had one rare drop, and it was for a different class. So my character couldn't even use it. So I'm like, well, now I have this thingy and I could maybe sell it. And then I go to the auction house, and since the stats of the items differentiate, so I would have had to like read through the descriptions of like 20 of the same item to kind of find out which one is the closest to the one I got, and then adjust the price kind of to be on the same level. And this was the point when I was like, I guess I'll play something else.
Yeah. So it sounds like they've remedied that and I should maybe give it another try.
Yeah, yeah. Right now it's really nice because they have these timed dungeons that usually the play sessions are really long, but with the timed stuff, you can really just use the 15 minutes or half an hour and still get a nice cycle of the gameplay. So it's really nice, and all of the content patches so far have been really good. Although I was a bit sad when they finally made the demon hunters not so effective, because I think the first three patches were like, we will finally nerf the demon hunters, but for some weird reason they were always more effective. But now my demon hunter is completely useless because everyone has monks.
You shouldn't have told me that because I have a demon hunter. But I guess I'm also so far behind that it probably doesn't matter. I'm like probably an eighth of the way through the game now.
Well, now you have to make a monk.
Okay, well, thanks for the tip.
Yeah, the best combination in the if you play with friends is to have three monks and the barbarian, or four monks. So wow, it's an easy choice.
So they're going to be nerfing monks then sometimes.
Yes, that's the next thing.
Yeah, for that kind of game, it doesn't matter quite as much as it does in some, like in a multiplayer game, like a game like Destiny or World of Warcraft or anything with like really more. Is there PvP at all in Diablo? Can you fight other players?
No.
I don't think so. Yeah, no, so it doesn't matter quite as much if one of them is overpowered.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, they have these like high score lists of who has done the time dungeons fastest. So there are these kind of top player lists, but it's not the same as PvP because it's kind of, it's a top player list. It's a different thing.
Yeah. Whereas in like games like StarCraft, every single patch is like tweaks. Yeah, if we're talking about like hiding numbers from players, like the numbers are not in the UI, but it'll be like change the rotation speed of the vulture unit from 0.171 to 0.168. This should improve the such and such balance during this part of this game on this map. And it's like, wow, okay.
Yeah, for Skylines, it was only because from the start we decided that this will be a single player experience.
Yeah,
which relieved us of all of these things, like what if someone cheats, and if they make a mode that something is really effective, like, well, then they do it. It's not a problem. If they want to play the game like that, they can. So making single player games is good. It helps a lot with the balancing.
Yeah, it's something that I think is really underrated and not really observed by players often, that they'll, something like Skyrim, which is this ridiculous game that part of the fun of it is you can go and do ridiculous things in the world, like, oh, you kill the king and now there's no king and you can't do that storyline anymore and now that sucks for you, so don't do it, right? Whereas in the multiplayer, like, oh yeah, we're gonna make an Skyrim MMO or whatever, Elder Scrolls Online, and then you can't have that stuff in the game because it would ruin it for everyone else.
Oh yeah, and it's for a player, it's kind of hard to understand that there are these limitations that the games, just Skyrim can't be a multiplayer game just by adding more players to the same world, because it doesn't work. So it's hard to communicate to the players sometimes what you're doing and and how this actually benefits them.
It's, I think most players aren't jerks, but it only takes a small number of jerks to ruin anything anytime there's an exploit like that. So,
yeah, well, this is the infamous thing in MMOs, like even Destiny, World of Warcraft, that you can't walk into another player. You just walk through them because it would just be too hard to deal with griefing. Like people just stand in the way of this hallway and then you can't get through them.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's just.
Yeah, I think the Conan MMO actually had these player characters that weren't like solid, that you couldn't walk through them. And they immediately had like blocked bridges and all of this. I think that's why they made the feature that the characters can climb walls. Because
oh, really?
This way they might get around the stuck people, but it really didn't take off, and I can't see why.
Man, it's both the best and the worst, the fact that people will do that.
People suck.
if you could just make a game and it's a good game, you don't need any players.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.